Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron, and on Zoom I've got John Lawson. Morning, John.
Good morning.
The thing we wanted to start off with, and this is something I emailed Waka Kotahi to ask them about, the Greenslade Road intersection on State Highway 23, because there's kind of concern that council can't get hold of that part of the highway for probably a few years and solve the problem of the speed going around that intersection. So first of all, that's because they will be getting control of that piece of the road, but Waka Kotahi has to do some work on it before it gets handed over to the council, and they have confirmed that it's not part of this current long-term plan. So if they do put some money aside for it, it's going to be no sooner than 2025, John. I guess we just have to accept that that side of things is just how it is, isn't it?
Yep, well, they're busy spending money on things like the transmission gully, so they don't have money for things like culverts in roads and local buses and various other things that we might prefer them to be spending money on.
So is that the road out of Wellington over toward Masterton and Greytown? And there's a few very nice communities over there that people enjoy to live in, and they'll now have easy access to central Wellington. Is that what that is?
Well, not over towards Masterton, it's over towards Levin and Palmerston North, so on State Highway 1.
Okay.
They've just spent $1.25 billion on that. So, sort of $2 million for a culvert's not much out of that sort of budget.
No, they wouldn't even notice. all right. Now, I also asked them, why didn't they install... Well, no, the district council asked them to install a warning sign on the bend. So if you're coming from Hamilton Folks toward Raglan and the bend before you get surprised when you see Greenslade Road, that said they came and had a look but decided not to put, I think it was a warning sign saying that there were queues, and they said they came and had a look and it's perfectly fine with the supplementary 65-kilometre-an-hour speed sign combined with the word concealed. And I sort of feel I might come back to them and ask them, isn't there a difference between concealed and hidden cues? John, do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't know what their guidelines are. They've got thousands of pages telling them how they ought to do things, and even their own designers don't know fully what's in those pages. So it depends what they happen to come across, I think.
Oh, so the designers don't actually use their own judgment. They just look up what the official rules are and that's it.
Well, if they can find them, and sometimes, it's like anything, when you've got thousands of pages, that sometimes you get contradictory things, and sometimes very often you get staff who have forgotten about some particular part of those thousands of pages.
Yeah, okay, you're filling me with confidence. They said they conducted the review in 2020, and they think an additional sign will increase clutter and actually reduce the effectiveness of the signage. I'm going to say that's a matter of opinion. The other thing that's been happening is there was a review about the speed on State Highway 23, and they put out the results, and that intersection definitely came up. Everyone in Raglan was like, some people were like, we don't want to go to 80 all the way to Hamilton, and others were like, we do want to go to 80 all the way to Hamilton, but everyone agreed that intersection was a concern. So they do know that. And then they were supposed to have got on to doing a more formal review at this stage, but they haven't yet. They're going slower than even they said they were going to. But they say that will come up. They'll be updating people, but there's absolutely no time frame on that at all, just that it will be happening.
And about 20 years ago, they were proposing put in a bypass that would have created a straight line from there across to three streams.
Oh, yes.
Across to where the Orchetti Road turns off. That one seems to have been long forgotten. But would have cut about a kilometre off the distance.
Yeah, okay, all right. So basically, formal consultation dates on the speed are to be finalised. That's it. So it's a very, whoever wrote the answers was very adept at not giving information, but not really giving much information. So the end result is, if we want a warning sign that says hidden cues for the Greenslade Road intersection, we're going to have to do it ourselves. Do you think that's a good idea, John?
People who go past it regularly probably don't notice the signs anyway, but so it's
I don't.
people who are not probably, well, like lots of people who come to Raglan, they've never been on the road before.
I have to admit, like, I don't notice the signs, but I do know the intersections there. But I suspect, I don't know, John, is there any, have there been any incidents at that intersection? I just don't know. I don't have any data on that. Do you know off the top of your head?
Yeah, well, if you have a look at the map that NZTA put out, Wakatahi, they've got a crash analysis map, and it covers the whole country, and there have been about 9 crashes in the last 20 years.
So is that
a high rate?
That's a high rate for a small population?
But, I mean, the whole of the state highway has got crashes along it, but and they're concentrated at all the junctions. So I've not done an analysis to see whether that junction's any more dangerous than any of the others. Maybe somebody can have a look at that map and look for the crash analysis data map on the Wakatahi website. Maybe we could put a link on our Facebook page to that one as well.
Okay. All right, let's move on to, usually I get John to bring all the information and I just sit there and talk, but I actually bought some today for a change. But John, going to the information you've bought, when the rates were decided, those 3 yearly, well, not the rates decided, but the property values, a lot of people objected to their property values, John. How many?
There were 427 altogether, 469 altogether, 427 maintained their objections.
So 42 were withdrawn for unstated reasons.
So 213 wanted reductions, 153 wanted increases.
Sorry, but what? They wanted their property value to go up, which would increase their rates.
Yes.
Do you have any explanation for this?
Yeah, well, when you're buying a property, you quite often look at the CV value.
Ah, right, yep.
So if you're thinking of selling, it's a good idea to put in an appeal and say, my property's not worth $1 million, it's worth $2 million. If you can get them to increase it, that increases your chances of getting a high price for whatever you're selling.
Is council generally happy? Just okay, you want to put your own rates up, we're more than happy to go along with it.
Well, they've certainly approved it for quite a few people because they're getting an extra $75,000 out of it.
Although, what's the overall though? Because some are going up, some are going down. What's the overall change?
Yeah. That's more than offset by the number of people who've got decreases out of their appeals.
Yeah.
So that the overall rates have gone down by $64,000.
Okay. I guess that's
$4,100. So yeah.
I guess that's not much considering the overall council yearly budget.
Yeah, but it doesn't say how much people were asking for. So I would suspect that people were asking for an awful lot more than that and haven't ended up with all that much.
Who actually decides? Who makes that decision?
I think they were part of the Ministry of Works at one time, but they're now called QV, Quotable Value.
So they're a government department?
They were a government department. I think it's one of those that got privatised in the 80s or 90s.
Okay, all right. Murky. Sorry, you were going to say something, John?
They've now got a contract with council to do the valuations.
Okay.
But council notes that they're getting quite a bargain with that, so I'm not quite sure what the quality of it will be.
cut rate valuations. All right, so and then you've got, what have you got after this? You've got some sums that are perhaps in the long-term plan, that are money that's going to be spent in our area?
Yep. Well, these figures you've been quoting have come out of the, or I've been quoting have come out of the Finance Committee agenda that was at the end of March, 30th of March.
Yep.
So that's Council's Finance Committee. And also on there, they've got a list of what they're going to be spending money on over the next year.
Yeah.
And one of the mysteries on there is what they put down as Raglan Aerodrome fees, minus $31,029.
Does that mean they're going to pay people to land?
Well, I suspect that's what the loss is on the airfield, but I'm not sure. There's just this title and then the figure. All the other figures are positive, and I'm sure that that's going to cost council money. So it could be that they're expecting to get 31,000 in fees from people landing at the airfield.
Do you think it's just a typo, or are there other negative figures in there? Because it does seem a bit weird.
There are a few other negative figures. I've not yet understood how they've reached them. So it might be a question to give Lisa some advance notice and say, what does this mean? She doesn't know off the top of her head any more than I do.
But no.
She might be able to find out.
Maybe they think they're going to save something by... Oh, no, let's just move on. Yeah. I'm guessing.
I just thought I'd mention that it was in there. And, it does show that they're looking to be still collecting fees over the next year, even though, of course, that when I last looked on Sunday, there was a huge amount of the fence closed, or cut rather, and they've closed the airfield to the end of the month again.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be getting the normal amount of fees this year, will they?
Well, not given way that's gone, but I mean, the same applies to the buses as well. So the bus patronage has gone down massively as well, and the amount that people are paying in fares has gone down, especially now that people are paying half fare. So,
what's the half fare story?
Well, the government's subsidising, at least for the next 3 months, that to have half fares on public transport through most of the country. So I see that certainly in places like New Plymouth and Wellington and Auckland, the stories of lots of people now using the buses in those areas.
Right, so that was enough to get more people on the bus?
Yeah, I haven't looked at the Raglan bus since the fares changed, so I don't know whether it's got more people on it or not.
But generally, bus patronage is down. This is an effect of COVID, do you think?
Yeah, definitely an effect of COVID, because they've produced the quarterly figures on bus patronage, and they were gradually climbing, but then they suddenly dropped when we had the first lockdown, and they've dropped even more with the recent lockdowns and disruption.
So the bus patronage is a subject very dear to John's heart. Is this just an averaged out thing? So every time there's a lockdown, hardly anyone uses the bus, and so the overall figures look lower?
Well, these are quarterly figures that they've given. You see the effect by going from 14,000 people in 3 months to 6,000 people in 3 months, which is more than halved. And the similar effect back in 2020 when it went from 15,000 down to 5,000. People are just not wanting to travel anywhere where they're sat in an enclosed space for an hour or so.
Also, people weren't allowed to travel anywhere.
Yep, that as well.
Yeah.
The aim of the half fare is to start using all those empty seats on the buses, because the average bus use throughout the country is only 8 passengers on each bus.
That seems crazy, doesn't it? It seemed like when you say it like that, John, it sounds like we've got too many buses. The bus service is overdone. But I know you're not going to agree with that, are you?
No, because only 1% of people use buses. So even if we could get the percentage up to 5%, you'd be filling the buses. And of course, there's the climate change report that we keep getting reports. We've got yet another one today. So disaster's about to come. At some stage, we need to get that bus use and bike use and walking and so on up well above the current 1% that we've got for people travelling on buses.
Should we, John? Why is it that the bus? I'm kind of curious about why the buses are so empty. Obviously, you need a bus service. You need to have regular buses for it to work. And we know that there's certain times of day when they're packed out. I guess they've already bought the big bus for the work time of day, like the morning work and the afternoon workers coming and going. So you just keep the bus going through the rest of the day, do you? Is that why it works out like that?
They've got three sizes of bus, and they do use the smallest size during the day. But even the small one's got ample room on it. I think it's a 50-seater rather than a 60 or 85-seater.
Oh, so there's still buses like the double-decker sit, gets used twice a day coming to Raglan, and then it just sits there the rest of the day, does it?
Yeah, well, the double-decker spends nearly all its time just parked in a car park somewhere.
Okay.
Either in Hamilton or in Raglan.
Okay. All right, so my theory about keeping the bus through the whole thing is completely wrong then. I don't understand how it all works, but John would like to see more people using the bus. No, John, you'd like to see a more effective bus service, wouldn't you? Then more people will use the bus.
Yeah, well, we did get a bit of optimistic news at the last community board meeting that they're talking about using the $100,000 a year that they've set aside for improving the buses. But they had a setback because, as I say, Waka Kotahi spent all that money on Transmission Gully, and they run out of money for anything else.
So that was going to be the internal bus service. So that was like that was going to go ahead possibly even this summer, I think. But then, yeah, the funding was pulled.
Yes. Well, the council's still got $100,000 a year set aside for it for the 3 years. But because Waka Kotahi didn't come up with their $100,000 contribution, they had to have a rethink, and they're still doing rethink. But we were told at the last community board meeting that a report had gone to the finance officer. So we'll see whether they do what finance officers often do and say no.
Well, that was my big fear. As soon as the CFO comes into it, she's just going to be like, no, we're not spending money. But I guess you never know your luck, do you? That's the, yeah, you never know your luck. Let's move on. So other things that money's been spent on, John, you've got Raglan Hills Reservoir number 2, $1 million going to be spent on that. Which is that reservoir? Can we see it from somewhere?
Well, Hills Road, which is as you go out of town, on the right there. And if you go up Hills Road, you get Cornwall Road. And if you go right down Cornwall Road, you get to the existing reservoir in the old quarry. And they're going to put another water tower next to that one.
Was that the one that was damaged when that earthquake happened a few years ago?
Well, they were all damaged with the earthquake, or at least the water in them was. It was stirred up.
That was the issue. So it didn't, of course, I think in my head I imagined that it had cracked the wall of the water tower or something, but that wasn't the case. It just stirred the water up and yucky stuff at the bottom mixed in.
I don't think anyone's, as far as I know, no one's still quite sure why it stirred the water up. It may well have been underground rather than actually in the system, because all our water comes out of the spring over near Extreme Waste.
Oh, okay.
Up to Hutawai Road there. And as far as I know, nobody knows quite where it comes from. It must come somewhere on Karioi, but I don't think anyone's ever traced quite where it comes from.
It's underground. It's filtered through the ground, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a natural spring. So, so that was why that happened. But this is a proposal that's been around for about 20 years now, ever since they looked at expanding the housing development over in the Lorenzen Bay area. And to provide for that, they decided they needed extra capacity so that when you turn your tap on, it doesn't run dry for lack of pressure. So they're building this year with this $1 million an extra water tower to go alongside the existing one.
So, John, that begs the question, where's the water coming from Rangitahi?
Well, it's all coming out of the spring, because the spring produces about, 3,000 cubic metres a day. Or at least they've got permission to take 3,000 cubic metres a day out of it.
But you need a water tower somewhere to like build up to maintain pressure, don't you? Are they doing that?
Yes. Yep. So there are currently three water towers. One is just above the spring, so they pump the water up from the spring to that one. It then runs by gravity to the water tower at the top of Bow Street, which is the one most of us know.
Mm.
And then it runs from there to the one in the quarry at the end of Cornwall Road. and there's going to be a second one there to provide for that extra capacity.
Okay, all right. Let's move on from that. Wastewater treatment plant upgrades, which we know that's been going on for a long time, nearly $5 million being spent there.
It's interesting to see that they've got a fairly big budget in there, so presumably they're planning to start work this year, but we still don't know the detail of what they're planning to do.
What stage is that project at, John? Are you up to date with that?
Well, they're still investigating whether they can dispose of the treated sewage onto farmland rather than put it into the harbour.
Yeah.
So, as far as I know, it's still at the stage of negotiating with landowners, seeing whether it's feasible, all those sort of things.
Okay, all right. Another thing, Raglan Community Centre, $500,000 seismic strengthening. We don't have a thing called a Raglan Community Centre. Is that likely the town hall? Did we ever pin that down?
Yeah, well, the long-term plan said that the town hall was going to have seismic strengthening.
Oh, TH, so, seismic strengthening. There we go. I've worked it out.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's my abbreviation.
Yeah.
I think that is the town hall. So you can maybe redesign the studio soon and not have that big wooden bench to get under.
To give some useful information on that, I did see, I was at the end of last year, there were some guys here, engineers, holding devices against the outside wall of the town hall. I think they were trying to determine the amount of reinforcing inside the concrete. So they spent quite a bit of time doing that. So obviously there's a designer, some engineers have been appointed to do the research and come up with the design. Usually, in a situation like this, when they want to strengthen an existing building, they might put a metal frame, some metal portal frames up inside. Is that the right phrase? So we might see something like that installed inside the town hall. I don't know what they would do about these parapet walls that sit above me, and the other ones I fear will fall on me in an earthquake. Maybe that's not actually a problem, but things are happening, I guess, is what we're saying, John.
There's also bearings that they can put into walls to make sure that they don't shake as much in an earthquake, so that they liquefy and it's like sort of floating on water rather than being solidly attached to the ground. So that could be one of the things they put in as well. They've done it in quite a number of old masonry buildings. So
in New Zealand?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I know there's things they've done like with really important old buildings in Europe. Sometimes they'll actually drill tiny holes and thread a wall with titanium rod. That's titanium rod, really strong rods anyway, and like that.
I think lead is what they usually use because lead melts at a fairly low temperature. So you apply quite a lot of energy to it and it melts. Whereas normally it will just hold the wall solidly in place. But when it's melted, the wall can then move around. And I think, is it seismic isolation, the technical term for it?
So if people are confused about why you want the wall to move around, when there's an earthquake, like a really, really tight, immovable object or a rigid object is actually going to crack. So usually with earthquakes, they try to create a situation where it can absorb a bit of movement. So this was John talking about isolating it from the ground in some way, so all the energy gets absorbed that way. Obviously, this is what you're talking about with the lead as well. But that's a more expensive option, I think, drilling holes in the wall. I think putting up a frame inside, even though people might not like it.
Yeah, I'm only speculating on what they're going to do. I don't actually know what this $500,000 is going to be spent on.
Yes, this is not news, folks. This is pure speculation on our behalf, although we're vaguely informed, aren't we, John?
Well, we know what's been done elsewhere, but we don't know what's going to happen to the town hall.
Yeah.
Even though you're sat in it at the moment.
I am. This conversation makes me nervous. Let's move on to something else. Raglan Sports Pavilion, virtually $100,000. What is the Raglan Sports Pavilion, John?
I don't know. It always mystifies me that they come up with these odd titles that none of us recognise.
Maybe a particular staff member in the council was being very adept at getting some money out of the long-term plan and was making up things to increase their budget. Speculation.
My guess is that it means the rugby club and the Western Shears building, so those buildings down at Cross Street.
Okay, so I thought they were privately owned buildings.
No, that count. We as ratepayers paid for those about 15 years ago.
Oh, okay. I know that the rugby club has had problems. I don't know what the status is at the moment. A few years ago, the floor, parts of the floor were not safe. So maybe that's what that's about, just upgrading that building or bringing it up to usable, fully usable status again. Next on your list, Raglan Walkways, $156,000. Do we know which walkways? Or are we getting new walkways, John? You'll be interested in this.
Well, they've been having a program of building them for a year or so now. So,
These are the concrete paths out to Wainui.
Yeah, well, as you well know, one's just gone in on Papahua,
yep.
In between the footbridge and the airfield. Another one is about to go in along Wainui Road from the Marae through to Rocket. And we've had the one that's been done over at Lorenzen Bay between Greenslade Road and Lorenzen Bay Road. So those are ones that have been or are being done this year.
But $156,000 is a reasonable amount of money when you're talking about a walkway. Is there more to it than just that link up past the Marae?
Well, there seems to be most things in the council, a lot of secrecy over what these things are being spent on. Which is why you need to delve into the depths of something like the Finance Committee report to find even this amount of information. So we don't actually know. It's possible Lisa might know, so it's worth asking her what these things are being spent on.
Mm.
So maybe when you talk to her in a week on Friday, is it?
Yeah.
Then maybe we'll get the answers to these, especially if you give her some advance notice that you're going to ask, and she can maybe delve around and find out.
You should send me a reminder email after the interview, our interview, John. The holiday park. Oh, you just got their income. So their income is down thanks to all the COVID lockdowns and the vaccine pass and the red setting and all that. But they still haven't made a loss.
They've still making a profit of $112,397 in the half year to January. But that's down from $462,000 the equivalent year before.
Mm.
So it does show that there's been a fairly big knock on, $400,000 or so in what their income has been.
Yeah, it's quite good that they have a fat profit margin. For people wondering, where does the money go, John, when the holiday park makes a profit? Who gets the money?
The aim of council up till now has been not to make a profit, but to plough it back into the holiday park, which is why we see more and more buildings being put up over there.
Mm.
At one time, it was a campground, but now it's more like a housing estate.
Hey, John, can I just interrupt you? That some of the noises getting through are messing up your sound. On your Zoom thing, have you got that button that says original sound on?
Let's have a look.
We'll just try and get this right, because unfortunately the microphone I use in the studio, which no one on air, no one out listening to us can hear, but it's picking up noises that's interfering with your Zoom call.
No, I can hear the noises as well, but I thought you couldn't. And I don't know where they're coming from.
They're coming from the town hall. They're happening here, but my studio microphone is not picking it up, so that usually the listeners can't hear it. But the microphone that you're listening to me on, a different microphone, and it's picking up everything.
Yep. Well, if the listeners can't hear, it doesn't matter too much.
It's causing your voice to drop out, like little silent patches, which is why I was wanting to try the original sound thing, and it's usually better.
As usual, I've forgotten where to find it.
Oh, if you just hover over the black screen, if it's ready to go, it'll be there. It'll just say original sound off. But if you can't see it, then there's lots more work has to be done, and we won't bore the listeners by going through into that section. So if you can't see it, it's not there. We won't worry about it. We'll move on. In actual fact, it could be time for a break, and we want to do a bit of history, John?
Well, there's a few other things we could cover.
Is
before
there?
We get there, but
what were those? Yeah. Oh, the Climathon.
Yes. Yep.
What's that? I thought that's what the whole world was doing, trying to make the climate hotter. That's the climathon.
Certainly there have been a series of them around the world, but they finally got to Waikato this week. So I joined in with that event, which culminated in having a weekend of talking about climate change issues. And it divided into about a dozen separate groups that came up with a dozen separate ideas on how we might make progress in Waikato. So hopefully over the next few months, we'll start to see the results of that. And we'll start to see various ideas, mainly about raising awareness of climate change, getting us to turn down our heating, getting us to insulate our houses, install electric panels, use buses, bikes, walking, all those sort of things.
So most of the ideas are aimed at getting individuals to do stuff?
Yes. Well, I suppose we've also got local elections coming up, so that got mentioned a few times. Because if individuals are aware of the problem, then they also start asking politicians about them and asking what the politicians are going to do about it. So, yeah, it works always round.
There's always been a history of, like, in public relations, of trying to turn issues into individual issues to detract from the behaviour of, well, the corporate sector and also government in action. I'm slightly distressed to see that that's mostly what's come out of it. I firmly believe that a lot of people just feel hopeless about it, and that destroys their energy and desire to do anything about it. If we had a government that was actually saying, we're going to solve this problem and we're going to make the corporate sector actually do things properly, I think we'd get a lot more people on board.
Yep, except that we're also getting information coming through from government on that, so that extent it's being driven by government, and not only government, also United Nations as well. So the reports we're getting coming through are mostly coming through from United Nations. But increasingly I'm hearing the climate change minister talking about what the government is doing and sounding quite optimistic, but it's still at the stage of optimism rather than being able to say just what is happening.
Mm. Okay, all right, let's put that aside. Do we want to talk? We're just about running out of time. Were there other things to talk about history? Were there other things you wanted to talk about political-wise?
Well, we have got the local elections coming up, and we have got the... one of the things that we haven't mentioned so far is the Rally New Zealand, which might well be coming back to Raglan. Lisa's been asking some of the local farmers along the Hunga Road what they make of it, and as far as I can make out, their reaction is that they're not keen to have it back again, because some of them think that the rally still hasn't paid to repair the road from the damage it did last time it was here.
I think there were issues that the bond they were asking for wasn't adequate for the task.
Yep, so in it's being proposed to have it on at the end of September, beginning of October, and they're talking about releasing the route for it later this month.
Okay,
which means that they're in discussion with council over that sort of thing. So if anyone's interested, either supporting or opposing it, they might like to ask Lisa for more information about it.